You are now listening to The Social Hour.
They're not PC, so if occasional foul language turns you off, then you have all been warned. This is the calm before the storm.
Coconut is the child porn of the fruit
interesting
world.
Get ready for the social hour.
Live from Dice World Studios in San Antonio, Texas, this is The Social Hour. On today's show, comic book creator Lori Calcaterra. And now your host. Hoping CBS cancels this show also so he can finally take a day off. Dees Casillas.
Malav Keen, everyone, welcome to the show. This is The Social Hour. I am Dees. Welcome back to another episode. Thanks for hanging out, guys. As usual, if you like what you hear, like what you see, tell a friend, let them know, rate us on your favorite podcast listening device or whatever you're doing out there. We appreciate it. It helps grow the show and let people know what you're doing these days. So we appreciate it, guys. As usual, go to deescomedy.com. Check out everything going on across the network. Live shows, live dates coming up quick. If you are listening to this the day it comes out on audio format, I will be at LOL Comedy Club, San Antonio's premier comedy club, tomorrow night. That is the 24th of July. My first time performing at LOL, so I'm excited to get in with them. They are one of the improv clubs across the nation, so that is big. I've always been wanting to perform for those clubs and finally get a chance to do that. So if you're in San Antonio, come up for that. My summer Pacific Northwest tour is kicking off in August, guys. Got a ton of dates around Washington, Oregon, Idaho, Montana, and more. So go to deescomedy.com, check out all the dates on the calendar, the where I will be. Tickets are going fast for a lot of those, especially some of the ones in Yakima. Those tend to sell out fast because my fellow Browns are out there holding Yakima down. Love to come through central Washington and tickle the funny bones of the migrant workers that haven't been hauled away by ICE yet. So come check out Yakima while there's still ethnicity there. And also, the next THC show at Upstage Comedy Lounge is August 10th, so make sure you mark that on your calendar. Those tickets go very quickly, so get your tickets to that. And shout out to our sponsor, Happy Chameleon, here in San Antonio, making sure that San Antonio is still happy. Now that Governor Abbott decided not to outlaw marijuana in our fine state. That's a lot of tax dollars they'd be leaving on the table. Come on, you want to just pass that off to the cartels? Let's pretend we're going to give it to the schools or some shit, and we'll just spend it on guns. And also, check out the Kickstarter for Kill Stand number 3. That's still running, guys. That'll be out for another couple weeks, so go get that. Is you can find the link on our website, Instagram, Facebook, all that stuff. Lots of cool exclusives, covers, variants, and more. We've got a CGC signed 9.8 gold label edition of number 1 available for you too. There's only one of those, so get that before someone else grabs it and it is gone. We are going to be at a couple shows the next few weeks also with Kill Stan. On August 10th, I'll be at the NTX show in Frisco, Texas. Jim Lee's going to be there. I'm going to pretend like you're there to see me. You'll probably be there to see Jim Lee. So will I. But stop by the Inferno booth. Also, the what is this thing called? It is the Latino Comic Con in Dallas, or the Texas Latino Comic Con in Dallas on August 9th. And then I'll be at the Tri-City Powerhouse Convention in Pasco, Washington, the 16th and 17th. I'm going to be a featured guest at the Del Rio Comic Con on September 6th and 7th, and lots more stuff coming out after that. So just check the calendar. Go to inferno.earth and the Instagram page for all that information and more. And that's it for the announcements today, guys. We are going to get into it with our guest. You've heard her here before. You've heard her on the Madness Entertainment Network. She's got her show, a couple shows over there, and a comic book coming out, number 7 of her new series, Path of the Pale Rider. Please welcome Lori Calcaterra. Lori, hello.
Hi, Deese. How are you, man?
I'm doing good. How you doing?
Very good. Very good. I'm a little hungry right now, but other than that, I'm great.
I thought you were going to say hungover.
I'm not hungover. Although I am sleep deprived, but it's all right.
You have a new background. This looks like almost your real house instead of the.
It's actually no reality.
Piano.
I know.
There's no piano and vaulted ceilings.
No. And that one was great because if I didn't move very much, people thought, like, you know, Indie Comics was paying for a grand piano in my house, which of course we know that's not reality.
Yeah, that's it doesn't work quite that way. So almost right, just a baby grand, not a full.
I was like, yeah, stick around, Elton John's gonna be here later.
Yeah we got upright piano money right now. We're waiting for the grand.
We have like keyboard,
yeah, guitar. Yeah, like 80 Casio keyboard, gently used mm-hmm. on the secondary market.
no strap included.
Oh yeah, if you're really cool playing it with the strap, god. Well, welcome back to the show. How have you been?
I've been great. I've been busy. You know how it goes. It's like life is circular but ever changing, so kids stuff. They're off for the summer right now. We have gotten to the point where everybody is sick of each other's face living in the same house. So we got maybe like 3 weeks left before they go back to school, which will be great. They'll be ready.
Oh, man. Is summer already almost over for kids?
It is. Well, here in Texas, yeah, kids start at like, I think the first day of school is August 13th.
God damn, that's crazy. That seems like prime summer.
But it's not here. I mean, like, you know, it's 106. They're not going outside.
Yeah, well, I do, but I'm crazy. So I went hiking the other day. It was like 101, and I'm like, I'm going to go hiking for 5 miles.
Why?
Yeah, because I love this. I'm like a reptile, basically. I'm in Anunnaki. I just want
to. You must be.
I just want to. You must be. Yeah, I like sleep on a heat rock.
You're one of those.
Yeah,
I get it.
Eat crickets. So.
Yeah, that's gross. That's gross. But yeah, it's like they're ready to go back to school at that point. They've been out since June. So okay. I know they end in May. God, they end in May here.
That's crazy.
I'm originally from Michigan, and in Michigan it's like your kids go back to school in September.
Right.
Like the week of Labor Day, like either right before or right after Labor Day, depending on how pissed off they want the parents to be. And then they get out in like mid June. And so here in Texas it was a change where it's like, okay, we're gonna start, you know, early August, but then you're done, you know, mid-May. So,
yeah,
there's less snow days here, so it works out. But anyway, so they're ready to go back.
It might be some tornado days or flood days, depending on how the, you know.
Yeah, the snow day is like, here's the thing, it's snow day, you can't go to school. And I'm like, why?
Yeah, it depends on what the Zionists do with their weather lasers this year.
Stop shooting the clouds, please.
Yeah.
All right? Thank you.
So, well, you've been working on your book. You got Path of the Pale Rider number 7 coming out, Kickstarter. Sounds like it fully funded in 3 days, which is awesome. Congratulations.
Yeah, which is crazy.
Yeah.
This is one of those issues that I've been talking about since the beginning, where I'm like, it's crazy, but wait until you see what happens in 7.
Yeah.
And so it's so great to finally be here. It's like you have to enjoy the journey. You have to enjoy all the things that lead up to this moment. So there's the big payoff. But it's like, I'm so excited to finally let people in on this secret that I've been sitting on for 2 years. You know, and it's like, oh gosh, it's finally we can talk about this.
It feels good. Well, you got a couple more months until it in people's hands and you can really talk about it.
Yeah, exactly. Because I've just been like, ooh, I'm going to drink your tears. Can't wait. Like, but we'll get there eventually. So, but yes.
So I assume you're taking a break now to give it a little breather until you, or are you jumping right into number 8?
Oh, yeah, we'll be, well, you know, fucking life happens. And so, when you have a team of people, you all have to be prepared to go into the next issue together. And so when shit happens with someone's dad or this, that, and the other, and it's like, I feel like this year has been really tough on my team, and I've kind of skirted underneath all the trauma that they've gone through. But so I don't think we're going to do another book before the end of the year. Mm-hmm. I don't want to launch a campaign in November and make everybody work through the holidays. Right. That would suck. And so we'll probably finish up this one in the fall, and then we'll have just time to plan what happens next, and we'll probably launch again in the spring. And the only reason, again, that I'm doing that is to just give everybody a break, because life has been piling on my team, and they don't need to be working over Thanksgiving and Christmas. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Gilbert Perez and Matt Chambers and Rachel Bullock are wonderful people, and I'm not that boss that's like, get the fuck to work. It's Christmas, and I don't care. McScrooge, you know, whatever.
Well, you know, to be fair, most people can't afford Christmas these days, so, you know, it's like, it's probably, give them something to do, at least they're working. Well,
to be said for that.
What's that?
So there's something to be said for that. Maybe they want to do some things, but we can always get a jump start on issue 8. Like, if they're like, hey, Lori, they'll be like, if I got money, like, let's just make some pages, and that way there's less to do when we get there, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
I mean, it is tough when you're coordinating, like, because it's not just you. Like, I was this convention last weekend, and there's a younger girl who is cute. Her dad brought her up to the table and wanted to ask questions about, you know, doing a comic book. And so it was, as he's asking, I realize he's asking for her. So, you know, and she was probably, I don't know, I'm bad at gauging ages. I would guess she was probably 12, you know. So
yeah.
I just kind of start engaging her, you know, treating her like a person and telling her. And I'm like, well, what do you do? And do you have anything on your iPad there? And I go, oh, so you write and draw. Okay. And I go, honestly, you've got it so good, because you don't need anyone else. Like, if you can write and draw and color this thing, you know, and you know, if you've got, you, so you could probably letter it too, I'm sure, at least to an extent. I'm like, you're golden. You got you're 10 steps ahead of everyone.
Right. And you can set your own schedule. You know what I mean? Like, you're not, because as a creator, from the creator's side, like, I'm the writer, and I need to pay a team. And so there has to be that Kickstarter phase where we raise funds so I can pay these people what they're worth, because they're worth every penny. And so there's that hassle. If I was just doing it myself, then it's just like, I just got to pay for the print, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's just a time investment at that point, which
it's
is, you know, which, like, you know, you can find time to invest in yourself. But man, if you, you know, when you got to pay the team, that's when
you have to take into consideration everybody's schedule, because it's like, I'm not trying to launch a Kickstarter when everybody's at a Comic-Con, and I'm not trying to have a deadline when I know, like, so-and-so is getting married. You know what I mean? Like, that's just inconsiderate. So you have to kind of pool, like, okay, what does everybody's schedule look like? You know, here's what I'm thinking. Is there any major, you know, things going on that this wouldn't work? And so things get pushed, or, you know, because of the team schedule. You just have to do that. That's part of being a team.
Yeah.
And so, like, I would love to do 4 books a year once a quarter, but it ain't going to happen. There's just too many moving parts. So as much as I would love to get out another issue this year, it's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
But when we do 8, there's a break for everybody, because then we're going to do our next trade paperback, which is super exciting. And so that kind of gives everybody a little bit of a breather to do their other projects and prep for cons and do all that stuff. And I'm the only one that has to work my butt off to get funding.
So what do you, how many issues are you putting into the next trade? What do you, could you do?
So I'm doing a trade every 4 issues.
Okay.
So it's 4, 4, and 4. The arc is 12. And then once that's done, I'll do it as a whole volume of, you know, it's just the one story altogether. So that's the plan, at least. I would love to do it quicker. Like, right now it's 12 issues of, like, average 24 pages. Issue 4 is 28 pages because I combined a couple things. But, I mean, if the Kickstarters start taking off, more, like even more than they are now, I could start doing like 2 issues at a time. So maybe we call it, you know, 6 issues instead of 12. But it's the same story. We're just telling it in different chunks.
Right, right.
And so you'll still get the same, you know, amount of story in like the second arc. And maybe we could just separate a little differently. But we'll see. It's just all, you know, we're pretty fluid. And it just depends on how things, you know, fall into place. So we'll see.
Well, I mean, that is the nice thing about doing, you know, being your own boss in this thing is like the, I mean, I think every issue of my book has been a different page count, you know, like, I mean, I think the first issue was 28, then it was like 24, the next one's like 32. And it's like, I just do what I need to do to tell the story. Like I don't have I don't have to leave room for advertising. I don't have to do a certain, we can't do more than this pages, otherwise we gotta, it's like, no, I just, you put in what you think you need to put in to tell that story.
Exactly. And so, hey, it's like, if you can get, you know, a big chunk of money and we can bust out 2 issues and put it in one book, let's do it. Like I would love to get the story out quicker, but it's just like, it, everything, it just depends on what's going on in life in the world. So
Well, for people who, you know, for any listeners who maybe aren't familiar with it, how about a quick elevator pitch on the book?
Gotcha. Well, Path of the Pale Rider. Let me go back. It is, if you like things like Fallout, Book of Eli, spaghetti westerns, Walking Dead with like a sprinkle of Cocaine Bear on top, that's what we are. It is a western apocalypse series where death is broken. So I always call us zombie adjacent. We have undead, but they're not the flesh craving brain eating undead. It's death is broken, so your body can die, but your soul doesn't leave your body upon death.
Okay.
And it's people, animals, insects, and fish, so it's broken for everything and everybody. And when you start really thinking about how that would work, like what would you eat? Where do people go? How do the undead act? Because in the beginning, they might just act like themselves, but as their brain rots, they can get forgetful or violent or vegetative. It generates like 5,000 questions about how this world works.
Yeah.
And that's really the fun part about it, because then you're like, what would happen with pesticides? And what would the government do? And where do we put kids? And if we don't have the magic bullet to the brain, what happens? Like, what happens if people get burnt to ash?
Yeah. Yeah, what's the... And all this and more is explored in the first 7 issues. Do we find out?
Well, we're getting there. I answer all the questions eventually, but this is a big story, so it's going to take a while to, like, answer the question, like, what happens if you get burnt to a crisp? But, like, we start the story 10 years into the apocalypse. We're following this guy who is a cowboy because things have devolved back to the Wild West. And he's, like, he's the last guy still looking for the answer of what the heck happened and can we fix it? There's a lot of conspiracy theory. There's a lot of, muddling through humanity because everybody would have a different approach of how to handle this.
Yeah.
And so you're going to see a lot of different groups. You're going to see him encounter people that you don't know if you can trust. You're going to see morally gray people and bad guys that you might relate to because they're just trying to protect their own people. It's wild. We have zombie bear chases and towns burning down because someone lit a swarm of undead bugs on fire. And it's wild. So it's a fun ride. And you can definitely, when you go to things like our Kickstarter page, you can see that we are having fun. We have this dark sense of humor. So we might we might shoot a puppy and then laugh about it.
So things happen. Sometimes puppies get shot.
Yeah, I mean, things happen. But it's like the puppy is still around because nothing dies. So welcome to the world of Sad Pancake, who is a forever puppy and people love him. So it's just, you know, we're funny and dark, but we have a fun time doing it.
So do you have, like, the end already in mind? you know how this whole thing ends. There is an end for it.
There is an end. I haven't written it down, but there is an end.
Okay.
And to me, I hate fluff. I don't know about you, but I watch a lot of movies. I've watched a lot of TV shows, and it would be, to me, it's the difference between like Breaking Bad and Lost.
Yeah.
Those two TV shows where one clearly had an ending in mind from the beginning, and you're following that character arc, and you see like Walter White develop and, you know, his morals and how he changes, but ultimately everything leads to that finale. And in Lost, where it's like they really had no idea where they were going.
Yeah.
And it's just like wishy-washy, and we're going to take you here, but we're not going to open the hatch for 12 weeks. And like, why are we at a zoo? And then, oh, it was all a dream, or I think we're dead, or we're not really going to explain it.
Yeah.
Nobody really liked that ending. And so for me, I hate fluff. So every episode I'm doing is very concise, and it is purposeful. So you're going to read the series, and you're going to see things in issue one that are going to come to fruition in issue eight.
Yeah.
You're going to see things happening in issue three and four. There's characters moving in the background that will be fleshed out in issue 13. And once you realize what this person is doing, those scenes in issue three and four take on a whole new meaning because you know who that is.
Yeah.
So it's, I spent a lot of time building this world and thinking through the story and writing and rewriting and putting in foreshadowing. So you're going to get all that fan payoff and connection when you read the story. And my God, you're going to be mad at me in issue 7.
Well, it's funny. So I will say that I agree with you so much. Like, it's so important to be just to cut the fat, you know, in everything.
Yeah.
But quick sidebar, I'm not sure if you're familiar with this, but like with Lost, they originally pitched it as like, it was like a 3-season show, and they had an ending. They had a whole arc. But then what happened is it got so wildly popular that ABC's like,
yes,
we got to keep this fucking,
yes,
show cow moving, you know?
We got to
fucking milk this thing. And they kept, so the writers started, you know, just kind of thicken it out, making shit up, and eventually,
yeah,
they completely lost the plot, and it became just, it just spirals out of control, you know?
Right. And that's one of the problems I think with television.
Yeah. 100%.
Because even when they're like, they're going along, and I'm sure the writers had a different, like Dexter.
Mm-hmm.
Dexter probably had a different ending. And so the network was like, hey, wrap it up. You're ending in 3 weeks. And they're like, what? No.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
we had a whole other thing. And they were like, nope, you get 3 episodes to wrap it up, guys. And that's when you get bullshit TV where it's like, none of this makes any sense. And it's just part of the game that you play. So when you get series like Breaking Bad, and I was like, how did they do that? Did they have an ending and they stuck to their guns? Or like, how was it that this one was so well crafted when everything else is like, hey, the network has a say in how you tell your story, you know?
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to Hollywood, I mean, it's so challenging. I think with maybe something like Breaking Bad is you can maybe have like strong producers and writers with enough clout to be like, hey, we can,
yes,
keep doing this our way, or we can just not do it. You know, it's,
yeah,
kind of, you know, it was some artistic integrity with the producers, which is few and far between with those spineless
Hard.
Fucks in Hollywood.
But and don't forget the pedophiles.
Yes,
right?
Yes. There. Also the pedophiles, many of them. Yeah, you know, in between diddling kids and roofing young starlets, you gotta have a little bit of integrity artistically. it shines somewhere. But I think that message is so important that, like, it's part of the reason that, especially as I get older and still do consume comic books and format, even, you know, shows, I don't really watch that much TV and stuff. It's part of the reason I love movies more than anything is because they're finite. Like, it's,
uh-huh,
there's a beginning, there's a middle, and an end. It's not this long, drawn out, like, well, we have to, we have, we're, we want, we need to do 20 episodes this season, and then if it does well, we'll do another season. We just, you know, you end up with so much fluff, right? It's like, no, make...
Yeah.
I'd rather watch 8 episodes that are all bangers. Like, I'm riveted the entire time, instead of draw this out over 4 seasons so you can get a little more ad revenue, you know? Because eventually, I'll watch half a season, then I'll just stop watching.
Yes, and I was going to say, Walking Dead is a prime example of this. Hmm. Because, remember, they used to split their season up into, like, first half, second half. Mm-hmm. And then, so, like, the bangers were 4 episodes. It was, like, season opening, big moment. We burnt shit up, and, like, there's big bombs, and we spent all its big production value.
Yep.
And then it was, like... how long was their series? It was like 12 or 13 episodes. And it was like 6 episodes of fluff.
Right.
Crap. And then the mid-season finale where it's like, oh, we're burning more shit down. And then we take a break for 3 months.
Right.
Right? And that's like, okay, this is where I don't pick it up again.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you're just giving people an opportunity to not, to just jump off, you know? And like, it's funny because... I made a joke about the other day about how, like, you know, how long did it take for you to realize it was a bad show?
Because it was a bad show. Thank you. I saw that and I was like, should I say something?
Well, we all watched it for longer than we should have. But eventually, at some point, I stopped around season 5 and was like, oh, I don't even like this show for like 3 seasons. What am I doing?
Yeah.
You know?
I'm with you. I probably watched way more than what I thought, you know? And at some point, I think it was with the Whispers, and I was just like, all right,
I gotta go. Done.
And it's like, I waited until it was on Netflix, and then I went back and I watched it and still wasn't fulfilled, but it's like, I had to finish it and say that I finished it, you know what I mean? But right. I have not watched Those That Live, whatever.
There's 6 spinoff shows.
I watched the first season of the Daryl Dixon one and was like, I don't care. I was like, ooh, Hogwarts. And then I stopped watching.
Okay.
Because the female lead, they're in France, and it was the girl that was actually in Goblet of Fire. She played Fleur Delacour.
I don't know Harry Potter.
You haven't watched Harry Potter. Okay, so she's a Harry Potter, one of the main actresses from that whatever movie. And I was like, is that who that is? And then they actually filmed at... the castle that they use for parts of Hogwarts. I was like, geez, this is so bizarre. Yeah. I'm like, are we watching Harry Potter or are we watching Walking Dead? Like, why is Daryl Dixon in Hogwarts right now with Fleur Delacour? So it was just very odd. And then I was like, okay, that's enough of that. I stopped watching Fear the Walking Dead, like, because they were like, look at all these characters. And then they killed a bunch of them. And I was like, and I don't care.
Yeah, it turns out I'm over it.
Yeah. So if there's more spinoffs than that, I haven't seen them.
Oh, there's like 6 other ones. There's like Those Crazy. Who Lived. There's Tales of the Walking Dead. There's Dead City, which is like Maggie and Negan.
Maggie and Negan. Haven't watched it.
There's a couple other ones too. And prime examples of these things where, I mean, in a ton of, for those comic book readers out there too, I mean, it's like, you know, anytime someone is like, oh, well, I can't believe they're doing this with Spider-Man. You're like, he's been in 8 monthly books for the last 65 years. You can't believe that they're doing something. Like, of course there's something crazy they're doing. It's the only way. It's either rehash old shit or do something crazy, you know?
It's like, no one, there's nothing else. They've done everything else, so they have to do this. Like, Spider-Man versus Paper Cuts. I don't know.
Yeah, it's just... So I love the, like, finite... You know, whether, and it doesn't have to be short. I mean, you can do, you know, you look at someone like Brian K. Vaughan, who, you know, like, writes, like, Why the Last Man. It's like 62 issues or something like that, which is, like, fine. He probably, he didn't have 62 issues in mind, but he had an ending and he kind of knew that we're working towards that.
Eventually.
You know, it'll be 50, it'll be 75, somewhere in there, you know?
Yeah.
But it makes you make things matter. You know,
yeah, but here's my other beef I have, because those are the ones that I like to read. Why the Last Man Standing, Invincible, screw the TV show, but The Walking Dead, when, you know, The Boys, these are all comic book series that are long running. But you, as a creator, if you pitch a long running series right now to Image or Vertigo or, you know, any of these other, you know, publishers, you won't even get a look. They want 6 issues and done. So it's like, how is, why? Why can't we as creators write long-term stuff and get eyes on our project anymore, you know?
Yeah, I think it's just, it's the commitment thing, you know? It's like they don't want to commit to publishing something. Like, they want something that's 6 issues, but also that you can write more of if it goes well, you know?
I guess, like, yeah, that's the thing.
But. Like, you know, they want to know it works, and then they're happy to invest in more, like, give you a little more line. But they're not going to give you a lot of line out the bat because it's just, it's the, you know, it's
too risky.
It's too tenuous to even try to recoup any money. I mean, I know a guy who, I won't say his name, but he worked for Image for years, very early on. He was one of the first non-founders that worked for Image. And he's been in the industry for that long, right? I mean, that's 35 years. Consistently working, and he's had creator-owned books there, and he always, you know, Eric Stevenson, the publisher at Image, is always like, you always got a home here, anytime you want, you know, come, we'll be happy to do stuff with you. He said that he's like, I can't get things looked at, I can't get anything done there. You know,
that's crazy.
So anytime someone, like a new creator's like, oh, I was going to pitch to Image, I'm like, don't even waste your time. It's not.
No, I mean, I've pitched Image in, I don't know, maybe a handful of times, and I've pitched all the other ones that people recommend, and I don't even get a rejection letter. I don't get any response.
Yeah. And here's the thing. It's like, it's not even, I try to tell you, like, it's not even indicative of you or your story. It's just that you're not competing against other creator-owned stories from other random people. You're competing against whatever Scott Snyder is asking them to do, or James Tinian. It's like, of course they're going to go with the 13th Tinian project that sells. Like, why?
You know, books, exactly.
So it's just it's tough, but also it makes it good because you can go do it. And do it yourself.
Right. Well, and that's part of it's putting in your time. It's embracing the suck.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's not going to be all fun and games. I've seen so many first-time creators that are like, I did a Kickstarter and I got 5 backers. And I was just like, did you do some research? Like, did you do your marketing? Did you do, you know, did you go look at other Kickstarters? Like, what podcasts are you on? What kind of, and they're like, I didn't do any of that. It's like, you need to do some research, you know? Just because you launch something on Kickstarter does not mean people just find you. There's hundreds of things on there that are live all at one time.
Yeah.
So you really got to learn the game. But you put in your time. But that's the one thing that I really like, is that this story is mine. There is no bureaucrat. There is no red tape. There is no executives that disagree with each other about where my story needs to go. I get to flesh out my characters as I see them. And then eventually, if, you know, Netflix wants to pay me $12 million to redo, fine, that's fine.
Yeah.
But at least the source material is there so that people know my characters before, like, Game of Thrones, you know, directors go in and change characters until they're so flawed that everybody's pissed off.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, so, I mean, hey,
there is that joy to it.
Listen, I want my art to be the way I want it to be until they back a Brinks truck up to my door, and then I will sell out artistically in a heartbeat.
Sure.
yeah, I mean, that is the benefit, because, I mean, I know when I first started pursuing this, you know, Kill Stan, I was working with a publisher. I had a publisher offer me an opportunity to do it with them, but it was going to the things they wanted to change on the book. I was like, I don't want to do that.
No.
You know,
yeah, like, it changed everything.
Yeah, it's like they want to change the name. They wanted the art style to be different. They wanted it to be a 4-issue miniseries. I'm like, which again, as we talked about, it's the investment thing. But I'm like, I can't tell this story in 4 issues. This story in 4 issues isn't a story. It's just a fluff piece then. you know?
Yeah.
And I'd rather just not tell it than tell it poorly.
Yeah, what's the point then, you know?
Yeah. Oh. So. Yeah, it is nice. So. Yeah, to be able to do it the way you want it and actually have it, you know, come out with the way it's meant to be.
Agreed, 100%. And that I think is one of the benefits of having crowdfunding. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's direct to consumer.
Yeah.
You guys are getting what I intend it to be, what my team, you know, Gilbert and Matt and Rachel intend it to be, because the four of us, work together to make it the best version of what we see fit.
Yeah.
And so you're getting that directly with the dollars that you spend. It doesn't get funneled through a third party. So that's, without crowdfunding, I wouldn't be able to afford all of this.
Yeah.
So thank goodness for that. It's a double-edged sword, because crowdfunding is great and it's accessible to everybody, but because it's accessible for everybody, you have to be loud and you have to set yourself apart in order for people to find you.
Yeah.
Because now everybody has access to this tool, and there's some good indie and there's some bad indie. It's just the nature of the business. So you got to find the good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, it is tough. But I think people gravitate to, they find stuff, and especially like you, you're active at conventions and stuff, which is, to me, the best way to grow independent stuff is just be really active at conventions, you know?
Mm-hmm. Which is also hard, because you have to put out capital in advance, because you're booking these tables maybe 6 to 11 months, 12 months in advance.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're locking down your capital that you also need to pay artists and print books. And so it's just this wonderful balancing act of what can I, how many cons can I go to? I need to plan around this. Will I have enough funds? And then because you can go to the con and have no books, and that's not going to do you any good.
Yeah. You gotta be able to, have a product there. Yeah. It is a weird, balance game of trying to figure out where to spend and when of okay, so I've got thousands wrapped up in conventions that I won't pay back for, months.
Months.
You've got, you can have potentially thousands in books, which I will sell at those conventions eventually. And you're you have to. And also, I don't know about you, but I'm part of my thing is I don't want to store hundreds and hundreds of copies of my book at my house either. I don't want to have,
as the man with shelves of boxes.
Well, this is why I don't want to, because I already have. I don't have room to put another. I've got right now I've got two long boxes of my books in my house. Well, one of number one and one of number two, and I try to reorder regularly, but it's it'd be nice to just do one order every couple, once every quarter, twice a year. But it's do you want to store thousands of copies of a book?
Or you put them all. I think the biggest shipment that I got was when I ordered the trade paperbacks, because again, it's you're ordering that in mass.
Yeah.
And those will be good. It's like ordering issue ones. Those will always be good.
Right.
And so I never hesitate to order a large batch. But when the trade paperbacks showed up in a pallet, my husband's like, "Oh, where are you putting those?" And I was like, "That's a great question."
Yeah.
Kind of all over wherever I can stash them.
Right. Yeah, they're in the bathroom. They're holding up the counter. Mm-hmm. There's under the loose stool,
kitchen, loose dining room, closet, bedroom. Yeah, they're just part of the decor now. You put a tablecloth over it, dress it up as a ghost for Halloween.
Yeah, it is an interesting balancing act to figure out where, how to do it all. So, do you have any conventions coming up you're doing?
Yes, this coming weekend I'm going to be, which is, I'll say the date because I'm not sure when this is airing, July 26th and 27th. I'm going to be in Irving, Texas, for Texas Frightmare. So it's actually a Halloween-based Comic-Con in the middle of July. Well, end of July. But it'll be my first time doing a horror con.
Oh.
So specifically horror and Halloween themed. So I think I'll fit right in with the zombie adjacent, undeath zombie bear I think we'll do fine there. And then the following week, I don't know if we're going to the same NTX, but there's an NTX on August the 2nd.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah. The one with Jim Lee.
Yes, that's it's August the 2nd. So don't show up on the 10th.
Yeah.
It'll be over.
I was going to ask you were going to that one because you were at the last one. I almost didn't. I wouldn't have gone to this one if Jim Lee wasn't going to be there.
Right. I think there's something to be said about building the audience because NTX has always been like collecting cards.
Yeah.
Pokemon cards, baseball cards, basketball cards. I didn't see any Magic cards. Maybe people have outgrown those. But it was mostly like card collecting.
Yeah, like sports. Right? Mostly sports cards sports is what cards. I saw, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then they kind of had this section was like, oh yeah, comic creators are here too.
Yeah, in the back. There it is. Keep going.
Like,
by the kitchen, go take a left down by the bathroom and then.
Yeah, by the bathroom where the stank is. But we were there and people were kind of like, oh, you know. And so we sold some books, but I don't think anybody had like a spectacular day, but it was like, this is what you can expect going forward.
Yeah.
So maybe this next show, and again, they're bringing in Jim Lee. And so I think the comic crowd will find us better. And then maybe the next one, there'll be more.
Yeah.
And so we'll see how it goes. And it's one of those, like, you take a chance going to a brand new con to see, you know, who will show up.
Yeah.
But I'll be there. I'm going to be on the back wall this time, but I'm going to be next to Marco DeFeo. And then, Von Fox from Hourglass Comics, who does Murder Face. So I'll be there with those guys, and we'll just have a party. You know, I'm sure you'll be right around the corner. We'll have a party together.
Yeah, it'll be all right. I mean, I did fine the first bit. Really, it was part of it is I have my cousin lives like 10 minutes from there. So I mean, I got a place to stay, and it's easy.
That's awesome.
But it's like. Yeah, if you know, I figured with Jim Lee being there, hopefully that draw a big comic book crowd. Also you run the risk of people being there just to go see Jim Lee and get their book signed and then being broke.
Spend their money there and be like, "Oh, you have really cool stuff, but I don't have any money left."
Yeah. So, but I will trade you a bunch of my books for a Jim Lee signature, guys. So if you're listening to this and you know,
once you got there, and then thinking, "Oh, look, I will give you 25 books." It was bad.
It wasn't bad. It was, you know, one day, you know, kind of easy in and out. But you know, again, first time show, so.
Yeah, I mean, that was to be expected. And again, like, people went there. And I mean, like, I post where I'm going on social media all the time. Like, I'm pretty active on, you know, socials. Like, here's where I'm going to be. Come see me on my table, such and such. Come see me. But I still had people that knew me that were there and were like, I had no idea you were going to be here. Like, I had no idea there was going to be comic books here. And I was just like, oh, well, surprise. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I have... I have this little problem where, for those of you, I think everyone knows, everyone who listens to the show definitely knows, my actual job is stand-up comedy, which means I am a professional shit talker, right? Which also means that I say outlandish things on social media sometimes.
Yes.
Which also means that the meta overlords do not like me.
This is true. So, probably your algorithm is suppressed.
I know that I'm shadow banned regularly. One time especially, I ran an ad for a show, like a event I was doing. I don't remember where, but some show I was doing. I ran an ad, put a couple $100 into it.
And
ticket sales were real low. And I'm like, what is going on with this? So I checked the ad. They were taking my money, but it literally had zero views. My ad literally had zero views. It ran for over 2 weeks, like $200, $300, whatever I put into it. Zero views. It got to zero people. And I'm like, you sons of bitches.
Wow.
So Yeah, my problem is that, like, my window of who I get to is very, very low. And so I need to remember that when, you know, certain times a year, I've got to, like, just shut the fuck up. for a few months.
Yeah, no, that's when you, like, write it in the notebook, like, this is gold, I'll use this later.
Yeah. So that's.
But I have to vouch for you, man. It is it's so fun to table next to you and hear all your little quips as people walk by. Like, you're super fun. I had a blast when we first met. We were like, hey, we're like ended up in next to each other at FanFest, and I just had a blast listening to you. And I was like stealing your people when you were done with them. I was like, ha ha! You're like, you bought his stuff. You're buying mine too. Ha ha ha! Had a good time.
It is nice when you have someone next to you who's also active, so you can kind of like
co-op a little bit,
which is nice. Yeah. You know, when you're
you don't like my comic, great, you're gonna hate his. Like, go check it out.
Yeah, the worst is getting. I mean, I've been between people where they're just like, I mean. No light. They might as well be dead. And then you're kind of trying to pull people in, and they're like, I don't like the energy coming from this side of the room. Oh boy. Oh.
Why do people show up to cons if they're just going to sit there? That's my.
Oh man, I don't know. It's it is one. I mean, I hate to be like a carnival barker, but also you kind of have to a little bit at least.
Oh, carnival barker works great for me. Yeah. I put on a Louisiana accent and a cowboy hat, and I'm just obnoxious. And that was the best day of sales I've ever had.
It works. It works. I mean, you know, people are attracted to the liveliness. I mean, if you're just sitting there. No energy. Like, no one's going to just wander up to your table. I mean, some people, but ostensibly no people are going to wander up and be like, hey, just what do you sell me this? Or what do you got?
So. Yeah, right. Sell me. Like, I have $50 in my hand. Right. Show me what you have for sale. Like, that doesn't happen. I'm always like, hey, you want to try some hot sauce? Like, fiending like a crack fiend. Like, hey, hot sauce. I got hot sauce over here.
Hey, anything to get them over there and get them looking at what you're doing. So, you know.
I haven't tried flashing people. I might be next.
There you go. That's, well, you know, could work. Never know until you try.
I could try it. I don't know how long. Someone else suggested lighting your table on fire for attention. I might do that too.
I don't know how long conventions will let you stay after that. The kid-friendly ones might be
a little upset when I'm like watching it burn.
Yeah. I have to tell you this story. I was at a convention the other weekend, and I ended up right next to the small convention. It was fine. It wasn't great. I didn't love it. But I ended up at the end of a row next to. Where the panels were, right beside me was the stage and the panels. And they had, both days, they had these two girls who, I couldn't tell you how old they were, but I would guess they're not allowed to legally vote. In fact, there's a chance they might not be allowed to legally get a driver's permit. And they were doing like this for like 2 hours each day. They were doing this very uncomfortable and loud like K-pop dancing. And I mean, I've seen these same moves at strip clubs in Tijuana. And I'm like, this is crazy that these girls, like, I don't know where their parents are, but like, this is, they're up there just and I'm like I don't want to like act like I'm mad at this, but I also don't want to be too supportive of this, because right.
That's a bad image.
yeah
I'm like 16, that's a problem.
Yeah, like, this is crazy. But I mean, it was very, very uncomfortable and I'm a pretty open guy, but I'm like, this is, I would never let my daughter dance like this in front of a crowd of people at a convention.
Good lord.
Yeah I mean, the body rolls and the rubbing their body and shaking their everything, I'm like, holy
all right, shit. I'm not gonna do that, Deez. I'm a little too, one, I'm way too old for that. I'm rocking the mom body because I've had a few kids, right? That would just be the most bizarre display of hot sauce hot sauce and comics. Hey, yeah, hey. People would leave. People would leave the con. I think it would work to my detriment.
You never know. Everyone's got a thing, Lori.
You know, I learned this the hard way, because with martial arts, I used to have people sign up for my class just to be beat up by the lady. And I was just like, you need to leave.
This is
not what we're here for.
They're one step away from a dominatrix right there. They're like, yeah.
Exactly. That's what they're just like, you can do that again. And I was like, you should go sit down.
Yeah. Can you do that harder? And now spit on me and tell me you hate me.
They're like, is this a jujitsu move? Is that why you're sitting on me? And I was just like, I'm going to elbow you in the face is what's going to happen.
Let's see. I'm trying to think. When
you're like, on that note.
This could go sideways very quickly. I'm trying to steer us back to your comic book somehow.
What now?
I'm trying to see where we're at here. Okay, let's. What we're gonna do? We've got about 10 minutes left, so we're gonna go to a segment that I'm trying to bring back in the show. It's called The Rundown. I used to do this with all my first-time guests. This isn't your first time on the show, but we haven't done this with you before. One of the reasons I wanted to do this with you, because I felt like it was a pertinent question given your premise of your comic book, of the Path of the Pale Rider. And so this is a series of questions we ask people. They don't mean a lot individually, but when you kind of put them together, they start to paint a picture of someone as a whole. You know, it's like a Briggs-Myers test.
Rorschach, we're gonna get to it. Big picture here.
So the first question, just a bunch of random questions. First one I'll ask, because it pertains to your book. How long do you think you would survive in a zombie apocalypse? Like Walking Dead style apocalypse.
Okay. Which one?
Yeah. For context, because like Walking Dead is the easiest one for people to wrap their head around. It's like Walking Dead style.
Yeah. I would survive a long time in Walking Dead world, because I have the martial arts skills, I have the survival skills, like I can garden, but I can also make clothes and I can stab you in the face. So I kind of check all the boxes.
Okay.
There. The hardest part would be surviving the other people.
Yeah.
But I can be vicious with them too. So I think I would survive Walking Dead really well. As long as I have food to eat, I'm happy.
You gotta find food. Can you hunt?
Yes.
Okay, you know how to dress an animal.
Very carefully. I would probably make a few mistakes, but I probably could figure it out.
You can figure it out.
You gotta drain all the blood first, and then you gotta piece them up and you skin them.
And there you go. Mm-hmm. All right. So Lori would survive the zombie apocalypse pretty well. Okay. What is the worst gift you ever received?
Monopoly. The board game.
Monopoly, the board game. Yeah, that's just like that's just like a sentence to spend 8 hours with your family and have everyone hate each other at the end.
Everybody, like in my experience, someone usually ends up flipping the board.
Right. Yeah. Eventually, because you get 7 hours in, and you're like, you're like, I think you're cheating, Grandma.
I hate you. Yeah. That's where it goes. So.
Yeah, you know, they made like a version where it goes faster. Like accelerated fast. It's supposed to take like, you know, half an hour. And I'm like, just stop selling the other version. No one wants the original version now.
The quickest version ever is just don't play.
Yeah, there you go. The best version of Monopoly is the one you never open.
The one you never open. I like it.
If they made a movie about your life, who would play you in a movie?
Salma Hayek or a younger Carrie Ann Moss, I want to say.
Okay, all right.
Salma Hayek. We'll go with Salma Hayek.
That's a good, that's not a bad choice. Mm-hmm. If you had to kill one endangered animal, any endangered animal, but it would nab
pandas.
Oh, that was very fast. Why pandas?
Because they deserve it. Like, if you can't reproduce to save your own series, your own species, then F you. You're just taking up space. Goodbye.
Yeah, we don't need you. If you're not trying, we're not trying for you.
Like, can we eat you? do you provide warmth or, you know what I mean, like milk or like bowl? No? Why are we keeping you alive? Get out. Your time is over.
Yeah, you know they're like show in zoos, they like show pandas, like panda porn and stuff like that. They show them videos of other pandas having sex. They actually do that.
To try and get them to reproduce?
Yeah, I'd be like, look, you can. Yeah.
I mean, have you watched pandas on, like, they have, like, panda TikToks versus pandas. And they just, like, they're idiots. They fall off of everything.
Yeah.
They're like, they have no reason to be around anymore. What are they doing?
Yeah, that Kung Fu Panda movie's a lie. Those motherfuckers are not graceful at all.
No. They literally roll places.
Yeah. All right, if you wrote an autobiography about your life, what would it be called?
Eat good food before you die.
Eat good food before you die. What's your favorite food?
I got lots. I love to cook. I love to bake. I'm never going to be skinny for this reason. But I need a good steak on my birthday with some sautéed mushrooms and thyme. Side of asparagus cooked to perfection, and then some either crispy potatoes or something. That's a great birthday dinner right there for me.
Two questions. Well, three questions. What cut of meat for your steak?
I could go really any way. Like I love getting the big tomahawk steaks because it's just so much fun to cook them, and also like feeds a ton of people. I like a good ribeye. I could do a really good cut of prime rib if we got like horseradish sauce or an au jus going. But you gotta like, I've done those before, and they're tricky because it's a big cut of meat.
Yeah.
And you gotta like, you gotta do the herbs in the right place, and they like the fat cap and blah blah. It cooks different times. So there's that. And so it's like you can go any which way, but really I just love a good filet. Like if I can get a filet cooked here's the problem, Deez. When you know how to cook like I do, you seldom go out to dinner for your own birthday. You end up making your own fucking dinner because you go out to places and the food comes wrong or it's not cooked the way you want it. And it's like, I paid for this on my birthday where I can make it better. So it's like, I end up cooking my own meal. No, that's not true. A lot of times I will ask my sister to come cook me dinner and she agrees because I buy all the stuff and she just has to come cook it.
Yeah, that's part of my problem is why I don't got to eat a lot, but I also go to the same place or get the same thing. So I find something I like, I'm like, I'm going to go enjoy this. I'm not going to risk getting something I don't like. I love to cook and I can cook well. So I'm like, I can do this better or I can do this, you know, cheaper. Yeah. And better too, especially for the cost of
exactly. I was like, now. I spent what $100 on this plate, and I'm not satisfied with it. So it's like, I'm gonna go pick up my own cut. You know, you can go to the butcher. It's Texas, like we have beef here. Go to the butcher and be like, that's the cut I want, and then you put together your own size, your spice profile, and you know, you make your own sauce and you saute your own mushrooms so they're not overdone or underdone. It just tastes so much better. But it's like, I don't want to do it on my birthday. So I'm like, sister, like, you come cook me steak.
How do you take your steak?
Medium rare.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And you said asparagus to perfection. What is perfection in asparagus?
Oh, not, it can't be mushy. It needs to, okay. So how I make asparagus is first I will steam it. You can blanch it, but I usually steam it. I'll put it in like a casserole dish or a baking dish. Lightly covered, you know, like small cover, not sealed, with some water in the bottom. And I'll steam it, microwave it for like 2 minutes, and then I'll dump the water, put in olive oil, and I'll season it, and then roast it. Garlic, butter, some lemon juice, whatever the seasoning you want. But so it has still a little bit of a bite. You can cut it, but it's not crunchy. You never want to crunch into an asparagus. But that mushy asparagus is the worst too.
Yeah.
It's gross.
Yeah.
So that's why it's like you gotta finesse it, right?
I like to give them a little fry in a pan with some olive oil because then it gives it a little crisp on the edges on the outside of the like the top of that those bristles get a little crisp on them.
I do that with I'll roast in the oven and then broil it at the end.
There you go. Yeah.
For like just a few minutes. So same thing. I like that, you know, crunchy, not crunchy, but like the broiled texture, the brown texture. It's really good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now I'm hungry, man.
all right. Do you believe in ghosts?
Yes.
Do you have any ghost stories?
I do, but I'm not going to share them.
Okay. It's mysterious.
Yeah.
Go to the Patreon.
It's a little
Patreon
personal, but yes. Okay. Yes. I do believe in ghosts.
What is the most dangerous animal? And I don't mean not like a rattlesnake, not like a spider, like a substantial animal. What is the most dangerous animal you think you could take in a fight to the death with your bare hands?
Oh, shnikes. I had a different answer until I heard that last part. An animal I could take with my bare hands?
Yeah. Fight to the death.
Oh, man. Depends on the animal. Like, I could, like, snakes and stuff, I could pick up by a tail and bash it into the ground.
Yeah.
If it's small enough, you can rip its neck. But, like, even with a dog, like, that's hard when they're trying to kill you, too, you know, especially when they got that bite force. I don't think I could take a dog. Maybe a cat.
A cat? A house cat?
I could probably kill a house cat. Like, if you could kick it and you can, you know. But, like, dog, I don't think I could take a dog, honestly, unless I had a weapon. If I have a weapon, I can take a lot of animals, right? Because I can keep that distance, so it's a little bit of ways, and I could hit it repeatedly. But if I had to do it with my bare hands, it's just like, oh, no, we're sticking to house cats and smaller.
I think
we know about a raccoon. They got thumbs.
Yeah, I know.
You know?
They got human hands, you know.
Yeah.
Which I always say, that's why you should let them touch you. God wouldn't have given them human hands if he didn't want them to touch you. That's my rule with raccoons.
My husband said, we should get a raccoon as a pet. I'm like, that sounds like a disaster.
Yeah, they're
mischievous.
We
could open the pantry. No.
Yeah.
Like, we could feed it Oreos. And I was like, this sounds like a bad plan. Sorry.
I asked someone that question one time, and they told me that they thought they could take a cougar, like a mountain lion. Like, there's no fucking way.
No, you
there's
can't.
No fucking way. I'm coming up. A mountain lion wants to kill you. You're gonna
die.
Dead.
Yeah, and I mean, like, when you were saying the most, lethal or terrifying, and of course, my first answer is bears. I'm terrified of bears.
Sure,
and then you're like, one that you could take down. I was like, not bears.
Not bears. Not bears. Yeah.
When people are like, I could take a bear, and I was like, you're not.
No way.
No way can you take a bear.
Yeah.
I don't care what size it is.
Uh-uh.
Like, you can't take a dog. If a dog wants you dead, you got no weapons, you're done.
I think you could take a dog. You would take some damage. But
maybe,
like,
you could.
Yeah.
Like, but, I don't. You see these guns?
Yeah.
No,
you could
judo
them.
They're not there.
Judo them, Lori. You got to give them the hip throw and, you know. Yeah, it's a little different when you're.
I mean,
with
I could kick. I could keep it away for a while, but eventually that fucker bites me. I'm in big trouble.
Yeah.
Like, it's the closing the distance, and I don't have muscle.
Yeah.
So if things are stronger than me, I can't beat it. You know, that's the problem. And so that's why I learned how to knife fight, is so I could stab things instead of have to arm wrestle them.
There you go. Yeah.
If I have weapons, I can win because
you could,
I'm proficient.
You could beat a wolf in a knife fight. That's
I could, 100%. Yes. I could beat dogs and wolves, maybe a cougar if I have a long weapon to keep it away from me. Like, I could probably do it with sword or stick. I might survive. I might bleed out. We might both die, let's be honest.
Yeah.
But barehanded, it's just, I'm a realist. Like, I understand, because I've been in fights, like, it is not what people think.
No.
You gas out quick, and if you don't end the fight quick, you are toast.
Yeah, it's...
Knife fight, it's like, whoever dies last is the winner.
Yeah, that's, it's a little rougher than most people give it credit for. What is your go-to karaoke song?
I have a few. I like Temple of the Dog.
Temple of the Dog. What is that?
The Hunger. It's like, it's old. It's an old. It was like Eddie Vedder and Chris Cornell.
Oh my God.
Hunger Strike. There was that one. I like singing Vaseline by Stone Temple Pilots. I like singing. I'm Only Happy When It Rains by Garbage.
The worst part about it is, like, you're not wrong in this, but when you call them, when you say old, I was thinking like 60s music.
No.
Also the music you're listening is also like
now.
30 years old.
It was
old,
cool
so,
when
yeah.
we were kids, but no, it's old now, buddy. Yeah. I went and saw Pearl Jam in concert last year. I was like, fuck, they're old. And then I looked around, I was like, shit, we're old.
Yeah, turns out we got old.
Out the entire crowd is old. And I was like, god damn it.
Yeah, that's what happens. All right, last question, because comic books, if you could have one superpower, what would it be?
I think I really want to turn invisible. I can escape my kids from time to time. She's not here, sorry.
Disappear, you're just sitting on the sofa. Invisible.
Yeah, I'd be like, not here, just like escape out the back door, floating in the pool by myself.
Yeah, you just need to get a timeshare in Florida, then you can escape them whenever you want.
Sounds like a terrible plan.
Like, I'm in Boca Raton.
He's like, come on, I got a timeshare you can have right now.
Yeah,
stop trying to sell me your timeshare, Deez. I'm not interested.
For just $3.99 a month, it's real. No. All right, Lori. Well, tell everyone where they can find you, where they can find the Kickstarter, where they can find the book, social media, website, all that good stuff.
I am on all the socials, everybody. So you can look up either Lori Calcaterra, or you can look up Path of the Pale Rider, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, whatever you prefer. Whatever you identify as. I have a Blue Sky. I'm never there. I'm on Threads again. I think my Instagram pushes to Threads, so I'm not really there either. But I have a website at pathofthepalerider.com. It's just kind of a landing place where if I'm not live on Kickstarter or I turn off late pledges, you can get books there. The best place to go, my friends, is the Kickstarter. Because you can get not only all of the books, you can pick up wherever you left off or get the newest thing, but that's where you get the stretch goals and the cool stuff that are exclusive. Like, we do custom Funko Pops. They're only on the Kickstarter. We're building a poker deck. And those are stretch goals that everybody gets for free on the Kickstarter. So it's like, you can wait until we publish the book and you can get it afterwards from the website, but you're going to miss out on all the cool extras that send everybody else. And we've already hit goal, so at this point, if you jump along on the bandwagon, you're getting a book, and you're getting all the stuff that we're unlocking with it. So we have digital rewards, we have physical rewards, we have hot sauce, we got secret things that only I know about. Like, you can, there's a link in my video, Deez. So if you watch the welcome video on the Kickstarter, there is a QR code. Don't be distracted by the fake one, people. You'll know what I mean. But there is an actual QR code that if you scan it, it will take you to a reward you can only find from scanning that QR code.
Oh.
So we play games and we do fun stuff and there's riddles to solve. And, you could get freaking postcards in the mail from a character. Like, we play games, right? So that's the best place to go, is there. Deez mentioned I have a podcast here on the Madness Entertainment Network group. I do. It's called The Tuesday Morning Brew. It's fabulous. I interview creators like Deez and myself. I had Rob Bultari on today. It's just a fun place to hang out and see what's new and popping in indie. You know, if you're tired of reboot, rehash, recycle shit, come see what's new. You can find your new favorite read on The Tuesday Morning Brew. So definitely come along. You belong.
All right. You heard it here, guys. We'll go check out Lori, follow her on all the social media, support the Kickstarter Path of the Pale Rider, catch up on all 7 issues, get in on the secret of number 7, and follow so you can get all the info for number 8 when it comes out. And as for me, again, go to deezcomedy.com. Check out live dates coming up. LOL Comedy Club in San Antonio this Thursday. That's July 24th. And the Kickstarter for Kill Stand number 3 is still going for a couple weeks, so check that out too. And that's it, guys. For Lori, I've been Deez. Thank you all very much. And we will see you all next week. Thank you.